I keep thinking the visual I always get is just that waiting to exhale thing. Just I've just never felt like, because I have my trigger, my wounds have, I've gravitated towards situations that has reinforced that untruth, that belief system.
Well, wait, you said I grabbed it. That's interesting to me.
It's just that I haven't believed that I was enough. And so I have found myself in situations that reinforce that lack of value, that lack of worth. And every relationship, I can look back on it from the most minute, just crazy puppy love to a marriage. I've had that question and have looked for that person to prove me wrong in a sense.
Hey friend, I'm Robin May, and a few of the professional hats that I wear includes being a transformational speaker, a life coach, and a licensed therapist. And personally, well, I'm a wife, a mommy to three girls, and a pastor's wife, just to name a few. Girl, I'm over here doing all the things while trying to stay in shape and keep my skin clear. But the truth is, I don't want to be known for being busy. I think that's a scheme that somebody set up. No, I want to be known for living a life that is in perfect alignment with what God intended. And I want to help you do the same. So it's with that in mind, I'd like to welcome you right here to Intentional Conversations with Robin May and friends. Over here, we're creating a safe space to have real conversations with real women on real topics. This is a judgment-free zone where we can be vulnerable and honest and curious about our lives so that we can elevate not just what we do, but who we are. So if any of that resonates with you, again, welcome to our safe space. This is Intentional Conversations with Robin May and friends.
Girl, we said this to me the other day. We go start. We were on our anniversary trip. We went on a trip. We were down. We were in Buckhead. We were not on a trip. But he goes, say, we were talking about marriage. He was, I said, did you think you were going to be happily married? He said, I mean, I didn't know. I was hoping. He said, you just never know. He said, but I wasn't going to go nowhere. Well, then we got into an argument. Because my thing is, in other words, you're not sticking and staying for me. You were going to stick and stay with Sally, with Susie, with Sheila. You were just going to stick and stay with whoever was out there.
And you expect that that man, newly married in his 20s, had that resolve at that moment? It is. And my other thing is, like, why ask? You know, that's what he feels right now.
I didn't
He
like that
literally
answer.
says over and over again that besides his relationship with Christ,
He said that Sunday. Wasn't that sweet?
But he says it in different ways every anniversary, and it's just not enough for you. Like, I don't understand.
Well, because I want him to say, baby, I was only sticking the stands for you. Anybody else out? It's hot in here.
It's not hot to me, but you got
the
your
lights.
You got your studio light. I mean, it's hitting though.
It is hitting.
Who did this?
Me today, right now. But Lee did it last time.
Okay.
Lee did it last time. And so for
And he had, I could tell you did it because he had us, I didn't have to be moving.
Yeah.
He had us centered perfectly.
He did it with Latrice. And I was like, good. He moved the table. And I was like, that's what I need to do. Because remember last
Oh, so
time
you
I
just
just
copied.
pushed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
You ready?
Ready.
Okay. All right. Okay, here we go. Here we go. Welcome. See, she's already laughing, y'all. Welcome to episode, I believe, 30 of Intentional Conversations with Robin May and friends. And I have a very highly requested guest. As you know, you have been requested to return back
I
to the
had
podcast.
No idea.
Yes. So Nikki is back. So many of you loved my episodes with her when we were diving into her book, Unplanned Perfection. You all loved that podcast as we talked about the unplanned moments of life. Well, she is back, honey.
Hey,
and
y'all.
We are getting into these dating streets, honey. We are talking about, as you know, a series called Dating Dilemmas. And this may be the last episode for this series.
And then save the best for last.
Save the best for last. And now I might, y'all, I'm still toying with, Nikki, you know I've been toying with having a few guys.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very nervous because a couple of the guys, they're going to keep it to
100.
Real.
One, well, if 100 is real, It's a thousand.
It's gonna be a thousand.
It's gonna be a thousand.
And I'm a little bit nervous about it, so I'm playing around with that. So if I do, it'll be released as a bonus episode. But this is our last conversation on this, so we got to get into a lot. Because I was going to do the last episode because I wanted to talk about a certain topic, but I'm going to just talk about that with you.
Okay.
So I don't want to assume that all of you know who Nikki is in case you missed the previous episode. So I'm going to allow her to introduce herself. But first, remember, I am re-releasing Before You Take His Name. Honey, we are redoing this cover.
I mean, we're going, she don't know yet. We're going to have a burn party. For
because
this cover.
This was all the way back in 2008, but when you have friends that keep it real, she said even back in 2008.
It was unacceptable.
So we're having a brand new cover. But even more than that, I have gone through, it has been a labor of love to make sure that this updated version can really resonate with you. So if you are watching this on YouTube, the link to pre-order is in the description. If you are watching this on your favorite podcast app, make sure you go to my Instagram and click the link in your bio to pre-order. Now, if you're not watching this in real time, if you have, if you're watching this down the line, you can always go to robinmayonline.com, click shop to order. All right, Nikki, introduce yourself to everybody. Tell them a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and what you think is important for them to know.
So I'm Nikia. All of my friends call me Nikki. And let's see, I'm from Chicago. My mom's family migrated there from Louisiana. My dad's family from Mississippi. They met in Chicago. But I've been a Georgia Peach since high school. And yes. So it's given second home status. And honestly, I don't think I would survive in Chicago. Right. I'm just not built for the weather. So it's definitely home here. It's second home. And I've been here since high school. And let's see, I'm a mom of two amazing yes. little munchkins. They're 6 and 7. I do behavioral data and analysis as my Monday through Friday. I also dibble in fashion. And
Okay, let me let her finish this before I say what I want to say. Go ahead.
I just released my first book this year. No, it was last year. Yes. And I just had our 6-month anniversary of that, like
yes.
a couple days ago. So that is just so dope. So I guess I'm an author these days.
You are an author, girl. And not just an author. Her book blew up. It was so amazing. But what I had to say, she said, I dibble in fashion. What I'm going to do is at the point of this release, I'm going to post her whole outfit in my stories so that you can see my girl is giving.
Y'all, she wouldn't let me in. She wouldn't. She was like,
I said, ma'am,
where are you going?
These boots are made for walking. Okay. So it was so, let me tell you something you just said that I did not know. Your mother is from, her people are from Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. So my grandmother people, they're from Louisiana.
Do you know what part?
So, oh my goodness, you're going to make me remember. I can't remember this.
Because
this
you
town.
Know these people are from Louisiana.
It's a very small, I'm talking small,
no,
small
these
town.
These people are from a town that is, they're my people
What's
as well.
What's the name of it?
It's called Rayville.
Mm-mm, it's not Rayville. Lee, I can't
Lee's
remember
mom is
it.
From Rayville and his dad is from,
my
oh my
mom
gosh.
Is, listen, I'm sorry. I should know. We've been to so many family reunions.
Delhi. His dad is from Delhi. Does that sound familiar? You, we've got to find
Vernondale. Vernondale or Vernondale or something along those lines. I apologize to my Louisiana people, but we had so many family reunions. Is it Vernondale? I'm gonna have to Google it.
And then you can just tag us.
I will.
Now, the reason why I'm saying that is because y'all don't know this, but my husband and Nikki's mom, they're basically best friends, okay?
I mean, they probably are, like, literally probably cousins.
They are cousins. And so I don't wonder if he knows that. Okay, so tell us a little bit about your siblings, because that's going to be important to our conversation. You are the only girl.
I am. I have 4 brothers, and I definitely think that it influences just my mindsets with, like, dating and interaction with guys and men and stuff. But, yeah, I was the only girl. That's how I grew up, and, yeah.
And you said you – let me tell you what you just left out. You said you were the mom to 2 munchkins, right? You said nothing about the fact that you're also a divorced mom.
I am. I am a divorced mom.
You very rarely describe yourself
you
like that.
You know what? I don't. And honestly, and I very much am. And I say single mom before I say divorced mom.
That's interesting. I wonder if that is subconscious.
I think it is. I think it feels, because even when you said it, it feels
some kind of way
negative, but yeah. It's not. It just is.
Wait a minute. Because as I was saying it, I felt a hesitation. Mm-hmm. And even as I'm rewriting the book, I mentioned my sister in it. You mm-hmm. read the intro, and mm-hmm. I said my sister is a divorced mm-hmm. Woman. And I had to ask her, was that okay? I don't yeah. know why I felt it, like, is it, that
it's,
okay?
It's a title. And I mean, but again, I think it goes just, even in our conversation, the connotation that yes. society or puts that, that puts on things. But yeah, I will gladly be a single mom too. Mm-hmm. And I love being a mom, you know,
yes.
and I think it's one of my love languages. But I very rarely, like, people have to ask.
Yes.
Have you ever been married? Yeah. Or,
and what's so interesting, my daughters, you know, I've brought on several women onto the podcast, and you also are one of the women that my daughters look to talk mm-hmm. to. And Riley just recently, my 9-year-old daughter, Riley, just recently said, what did she ask? Because you were on Marco when she
am
asked.
Am I still married?
Yes,
right?
She said, yes. Auntie Nikki's still married. And that was such a, like, you were at Auntie Nikki's house. You see her every
and that's
week.
That's how little, it just in my everyday life that yes. I address that space in my life.
Okay, so speaking of that space, we're going to hold off before we get there. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you a little bit about how you would have observed your primary understanding of relationships growing up. Like, mm-hmm. can you point back to a time when you remember first coming into a thought of, wait, my mom is a single mom, which mm-hmm. she is. When right. did you first remember that correlating for you?
Probably when, so my mom gave her life to Christ, and then mm-hmm. she became very intentional about building that within herself and us. Mm-hmm. And so we were church kids. Like, when she decided to make that transition, she fully, like, she was involved in the church. She was over children's church. Mm-hmm. And so I created my first real friendships there. Mm-hmm. And so, like, my besties now, like, from Chicago, I met them in church.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. so, but every single one have two parent homes. Mm-hmm. And so I just remember us having sleepovers and kind of noticing it, like, I would go to this person's house and their mom and dad were there mm-hmm. and they were a family in this aspect. And I would go to this person's house and their mom and dad were there. And I was just like, I was the different one in the group, you know? And so wow. that's how, because our little family, like, it felt like a family to me.
And it was a family.
And we were like, we were always very close. Mom mm-hmm. always did things with us. So I didn't feel like I was missing out per se in mm-hmm. our bubble. But then I started to realize, like, oh, you are, like, something very much is missing.
You know, I hate to jump all the way here mm-hmm. and she may make me cut this out. But Nikki, when you just said, so we've talked about this a lot, mm-hmm. but I had never asked you that direct question. And when you said, I remember feeling like the different one mm-hmm. in my circle, that even comes up to this day.
Yes, yes. And you know, I was thinking about this the other day. I can't remember what triggered it, but I don't know that I have ever not felt like that in different spaces outside of, and I think that's why, like, I'm just so close with my siblings mm-hmm. because that space just feels so safe to me. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't feel like an outsider. Mm-hmm. But in other spaces, I can find a way that I feel yes. like in this space, in this circle, this is the way that you're, like, different. In this circle, this is the way that you're different.
Wow.
And in every single circle. But yeah, I distinctly remember that as a kid, feeling like this isn't, you aren't the same as them.
Girl, and so that the reality is, that triggered something with inside mm-hmm. of you.
Yes.
And so that has kind of permeated. And what's interesting is when I talked with Anika, who was our last guest, I talked about how the reality with wounding mm-hmm. or the stories we tell ourselves is there's an element of truth in it
yes.
that allows us to believe it. And yes. so even when we talk about the places where you feel different, we can point to mm-hmm. where there is a difference. But I think the pain exacerbates it or exaggerates it.
Yes. And you end up internalizing things that really have nothing to do with you.
Yes.
And so it's my fault that this is the way it is, because it's they have it. So it's obviously something wrong with me. And then you just care. And it's a very subconscious, just uncomfortable, like low-key just awkwardness that you just carry. And I think as I've gotten older, I've learned that's not the truth.
Yes.
And so it doesn't carry, it doesn't hold as much weight as it used to.
Absolutely.
But I can still feel it and see
listen,
it.
Listen, even if you're not single, this whole podcast or this whole series, I've been saying, even if you're not single, that awkwardness Nikki is talking about can then influence or infiltrate how you connect with people, and you're making an assumption about people who are in your world that simply may not be true. They have no idea you're making that assumption. Okay, so back to being a child and starting to say, wait a minute, there you have mom and dad. I have mom. Mom is amazing. However, what was the however? Did you start, I remember when we talked about Unplanned Perfection, your book, which people can order by going to?
They can by going to www.unplannedperfectiononline.com.
Absolutely, grab it. And when I tell you grab it, it can change your life if you let it. So even, I remember you talking about in the book how you began to, because of that, romanticize your dad.
Yes, I romanticized because I was then just started to figure out, okay, this is the missing key. And so if I could somehow insert him back in, then that feeling would go away, and then I wouldn't feel that way anymore, and I just desperately didn't want to feel that way anymore. So yeah, I romanticized him, and I honestly can see how that trait, I would transfer that to later on dating relationships too, and not being able to clearly see someone for who they were and seeing them for what they could be, you know, later on.
Yes, I
definitely see how I romanticize relationships for sure. But yeah, absolutely.
And so what happened, or how, let me put it like this. You're a little girl, you started to romanticize your dad. He's, I want to say in and out, but would you even describe it as in and out?
I mean,
or more just out?
Light on the end.
Be careful with that.
Light on the end, heavy on the out, you know. But I mean, I think when he was in, it wasn't a him wanting to be in. It was like, okay, my mom's like, come get your kid. Yes, come get your kids or come see your kid, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So definitely heavy on the out. But I think when I realized that it wasn't going to be as easy as inserting him in and then the picture being pretty, it was really devastating for me. I spent years just being angry at him. And I think it was just because I was tired of projecting that within myself. And so it started with a, what's wrong with you, you know, and then when I got older and I was just tired of not blaming myself for it, it was like, I know I actually hate you. I can't stand, like, why would you do that? You know, that kind of thing. And it was just a process of eventually just forgiving him and forgiving myself for allowing that just rage to just see, you know, for years and years. It was very difficult because even now I look back and I wonder if I had forgiven him sooner, you know, like what our relationship could have blossomed into earlier on.
Because he eventually passed away.
Yes, yes. And the time between me really forgiving him, letting it go, and him passing away was only a few years. And so I spent a lot of time just angry with him for just not showing up the way I needed him to.
Well, I don't want to rush past another or to expound upon that wounding that happened. And again, as Nikki is sharing, or as any of the guests are sharing, or heck, even as I'm sharing, I want you to consider your own wounding. Listen, I always say I share my crazy so you don't have to share yours. But I want this to be a place where you are looking in the mirror, like I'm holding up a proverbial mirror and you're looking at it. So as Nikki is sharing vulnerably, don't just look at her story, because that may not be yours, but you have a wounding. So when we talk about that, expound a little bit more about this idea that because he wasn't showing up, you began to tell yourself that you weren't good enough or worthy enough? What was that messaging?
And I don't even know what the first, like how I put that together.
Right.
It felt very clear. Like I was like, yeah, that makes sense to me, you know? And again, cause I had so many people, like friends my age, you know, just cool girls, like I couldn't see a difference between them and I. Like, we all did good in school, like, and so we were all good girls to me, and so it just made me feel like, you know, they have so, and I desperately want what they have, and I must not be doing something that they're doing, and I couldn't put it together. I didn't know what that thing was. And so I always felt like different, you know.
But you know, the reason why that's really giving me pause. Okay. Y'all know I have been talking a little bit about Risa Tisa. Go ahead, give me your face. Okay. I've been so much so I did a bonus episode about Risa Tisa. If you don't know what I'm talking about, girl, just Google it. She uses an expletive to describe who she got married to. So I like to say, who the heck did I marry?
I love
that's
that.
That's what she says. That's what I say, because you know I'm not going to curse over here. But one of the things that stood out about her, and not just about her, about it. Now, Nikki hasn't looked at it.
I have not.
I'm trying to force her to.
Is it really I'm trying to force, or is it borderline bullying at this point?
Because I want to talk about it. I want to talk about everybody. Okay. But the reason why it came up, what you just said, the connection I'm making, is that women do this all the time. We do it to ourselves. We do it to one another. Mm-hmm. And men often contribute to it as well. Mm-hmm. That when you're listening to her story, it is a constant messaging talking about Risa Tisa of what she did wrong, or what she could have done better, or what was wrong with her. And there is some accountability that she has. And that's the reason why I realized, because there's another person right now in pop culture who I will not say, okay, because I don't get this deep into pop culture on screen. But there's another person who I don't find myself coming to their rescue the way I am with Risa Tisa, because that person isn't taking accountability. But Risa is taking accountability in what she did to contribute to the dynamic. But the reality is, the toxicity in what she's saying is true is really more about his character than it is a reflection of hers. And I hear women often say, or people say about women, is what's wrong with her. But that messaging started with you as a little kid. What is wrong with me that this adult... And of course, as a child, you're not able to process to that level.
Right.
But I'm just suggesting that messaging can start so soon that we internalize it and make it something that we are doing wrong.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, the thing about it, and it's why I'm so careful about the things I hear my children saying, and I catch it every time, because I recognize that they're 6 and they're 7, but that's when those internal messages start.
Because
that's the story you're telling. 5, 6, you know, like by the time I was in kindergarten, that's when my mom started to, you know, go to church. This is when my life is evolving like this. And so
you were Riley's age. Yes. Riley's 9, and then what grade is she in? I'm pretty sure she's in the.
Y'all, she's not talking about my child. I want to be clear. Because it would make sense if she's saying what grade is she in.
Riley's about in the fourth grade.
If she was saying that about my children, that would make total sense, y'all. She's asking me about what grade
I have a lot of children.
Her child is in.
And that's why it takes a minute.
I'm pretty sure she's in fourth grade.
I'm pretty certain.
I am pretty certain she's in the fourth grade too.
And so that's the time when you were starting to shape these realities. And you know, Nikki talked about being careful about listening to the messaging that her children are giving. I've shared this with you before, Nikki. There was one time that I just popped off on one of the girls, just went off, Ryan or Reagan, one of the older girls, and because they had a flip mouth, and I don't even really curse at my kids. When I say really, I'm probably gonna say hell. I mean, baby, when I say hell,
I'm real lightweight, y'all, whatever you thinking, water it down, okay? Water it down.
Because my sister would be like, baby,
that was nothing. But
but for my children, if I say hell, they like, woo. So I went off about something. Now, this doesn't mean that I'm over there floating on clouds. Let's be clear, because I have my ways. So anyway, I go off on one of them and I realize that I'd taken it too far. I was just too out of control. So I go back to apologize, and which is, hey, Mama, I love you. You're amazing. I just don't have a memory of my mother coming to apologize.
Yeah.
So I came and I apologized, and I realized that the way I was apologizing really had an undercurrent of abusive language to it.
Mm.
Because I said to them, I'm so sorry that you made me do this. Mm. I was so upset because, and if you hadn't have done this, I wouldn't have. And as I was saying that out of my mouth, I recognized that I was telling this child that she was the reason mm-hmm. that I responded the way I responded. And I had to catch that language, because that's what abusers say.
Mm-hmm.
If you hadn't have done this, I wouldn't have had to do that. No. And so I stopped myself and mm-hmm. said, wait. Mommy's behavior mm-hmm. is not a reflection of you. I responded in a certain way, and I have to be in charge of my own behaviors. But that's just an indicator of how easy that messaging can be. Because if I'm saying that to her, and I am her caregiver, and then a significant partner says that, well, that's been modeled for her.
Yes.
So I'm leaning into this is because that messaging started a long time ago. And I have seen that messaging play out in your life and other women's lives, that this happens by this man, and it becomes because of
me. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Yeah. And even I wish I could remember the study, but it's so fascinating. And they talk about how children before the age of 7, they don't have the ability to reason.
Mm.
And so everything that you tell them as their caregiver is truth to them. Like, their brains can't even. And so as an adult, if you go off and say or imply something, how much work you then have to do to then undo what in their brains is considered fact. You know,
Nikki, you and never so shared this with me.
It is, and so I probably go really extreme on the messaging that I promote in my household, and then what I hear them saying to themselves in response to failing, in response to getting into it with each other. And I'm like, no. No, that's not what that is. That it's this. And trying to, redirect it and something. They'd be like, okay, girl.
It's too much. Remember, I ministered a message recently at TFC and at our church. And I talked about how, as little girls, we all had the little flower. Mm-hmm. And we would say, he loves me, he loves me not. He loves me, he loves me not. And I always said that if it was going to land on he loves me not, sis would get a new flower.
Listen, start right over.
Well, I also went on to say how that's what little girls were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then little girls would go home and tell mommy, daddy maybe, or even a big sister, cousin, little Johnny hit me. And what we would say is, girl, little Johnny likes you.
Yes.
That's just a love tap. And that messaging begins to connect affection and aggression.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of those are messaging. Okay. So we're going to fast forward a little bit, because if you want to know more about her story, baby, read the book.
You can.
Read the book. Go on over to unplannedperfectiononline.com and make sure you grab the book. But I want to fast forward. So you have this messaging going on.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me. Oh, wait. Because you went through a stage where you were very tomboyish, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
When did you begin to realize, wait a minute, I'm cute?
You know, it's so crazy. It was between middle school and before. It was given. And my poor mom, she was very excited to have a girl. I mean, very excited.
Yes.
And I give her so much kudos for letting me just figure myself out,
mm-hmm.
because she really wanted me to grow up really frou-frou. Yes. And I was like, no, thank you. At some point, I said, absolutely not.
And I
wore their clothes every single day. I would slick my hair back. I didn't want to wear any earrings. I put my hair in a bun, and she just let me live.
Nikki, I would have been
mortified. When I look back, I'm like, it's one picture, my seventh grade school picture I still have. And I have on this oversized, just like t-shirt. I now know I got on my brother jeans underneath
it.
And it's just, but between 8th grade and 9th grade, they had an orientation at school. Uh-huh. And I went to high school my 9th grade before it started. And I was just walking around and I was like, And a couple guys looked at me. And mind you, I'm still in the baggy clothes or whatever. And I was like, okay. And literally, like, when my mom took us shopping for school, and I just found myself gravitating more towards girlier things. And when I would try them on, I was like, I think I'm kind of cute. Like, and so, of course, my mom is hyping this whole thing up. Yes. And she's like, let's go. Let's make this transition. So she's willing to buy anything at that point. And I just think I just naturally just kind of found myself.
And you know what's so interesting? We talked about this in the last podcast, how style really is your expression. Mm-hmm. We talk about love languages a lot, Nikki and I, much further than the actual love languages, right? Yes. That we all know about. Because she said a few minutes ago that motherhood is a love language. But fashion is definitely your love language as well. But what's interesting, we didn't say, if you ever saw her mother, you would understand that her mother's love language is fashion as well. She eats you up.
It's sickening at this point. Like, effortlessly.
She is just next level fly.
That's her waist.
That's her waist right there after having 15 children.
At 15.
And she is older than me, clearly. I'm not giving, Mama Alicia, I'm not giving your age on here. I know better. I've said enough. Just know. Her oldest child is...
45.
Okay. So, all right. So I want to jump. So you started realizing you were cute around 9th grade. When did you have your first boyfriend? Did I know your first boyfriend? Was it who I think it is?
I think so. Well, okay. I was not studying boys.
Like, in 9th grade, you weren't?
Real lightweight. Like, and I think I do this now still. Like, I'll go back and forth. I'll flirt. Mm-hmm. But, like,
when... Can you talk to Reagan about... Sorry, y'all. Give me a minute, because I need to have a... Can you talk to Reagan about this?
What?
So that she knows it's okay, that she's not all into boys?
Yes. Okay, thank you. So I wasn't. And honestly, I didn't kiss a boy. I told you this. I didn't kiss a boy until...
To what?
Junior year.
Oh, no.
I was here. And I... remember it so distinctly.
You did not kiss a boy until you were in the 11th grade.
Like a real kiss?
My first kiss.
I'm aware. Go ahead, tell the people.
My tell first people. Kiss was in tell the pre-K. People where she was kissing. It was pre-K and kissing. It was Herman.
Kissing Herman. Herman.
Who I'm Facebook friends to this day.
Kissing Herman.
And they didn't give me ice
y'all.
Cream because no. Christy Peace, my best friend, hey Christy.
She told on y'all.
She told on us.
And she should have. She should have been alarmed.
And it was kindergarten. That's better than pre-K. It was kindergarten. And Christy told. And I didn't think that was going to happen. So we got ice cream. And I went to a private Christian school.
They said,
it was ice cream time. Everybody was like, called us up one by one. Nikki. Lisa, Robin, come get your ice cream. I get up to go get my ice cream. They said, oh, never mind. You in the playground kissing Herman. Yes. You don't get to get in there.
They don't need to be rewarded. Traumatic. That is traumatic. And what they should have been doing is having a little chit-chat with you.
Yeah, pulling me to the side. It didn't stop me from kissing, though.
It didn't hit that hard, okay? They should have withheld some more treats.
I cannot believe you were in the living
room. I was a junior in high school before I had a real kiss. And so I was really...
Was it your brothers that impacted?
I think it was probably just more... I don't think I trusted guys. I don't think I did. And so it would only be to a certain extent that I would... And then it would be like, And so...
Now. To be transparent and vulnerable in this moment, which you talk about in the book, you did have traumatic experience, several experiences that... Do you believe that that contributed to your lack of trust?
Yes, I do. I think, well, probably just the guarded nature.
A cocoon.
Yes. And so I am very... Especially then, I just didn't have words for it. Just very particular with who would then come beneath, like, my space. And it's
that makes sense.
And so I just didn't. I didn't. I'm trying to think if he was like, I'm trying to think if he was my first boyfriend. Probably not like my first boyfriend, but like a real relationship where I allowed myself to be vulnerable.
Now, were your girlfriends talking about boys? Yes.
And I would be fully into it, like talking with them about it, you know, just not.
Well, and if you think again, if we are, see what I'm about to do, because y'all not going to think I'm just fast out here in kindergarten, but. How old are you in kindergarten? Let's say 5?
Yes.
Ooh, this is ridiculous. But if I was 5, that means my sister was 13. Mm-hmm. And I remember being a little girl, and when my sister would have people over, girlfriends, her friends over, I would sneak and lay, I would crawl on the floor into her room. We had Jack and Jill bathrooms, or bathroom, and I would crawl. And I would listen to their conversations. I would.
So your level of exposure. My level of exposure
was to another level. And when she started having boys over, and she would, we had a little living room that the doors closed, but I would go and peek, and she'd be kissing a boy. And so I had an exposure to this idea of where, oh, Lord Riley, Jesus. Okay, so y'all see, this is real conversations, honey, because I'm trying to flesh that out, but it makes total sense. Okay, so then you have this first real boyfriend, junior high school,
and no. So that the guy who I kissed, well, that was not my first real boyfriend. No,
okay.
So he wasn't my first kiss, but I was just like, let me go ahead and get, like, I started to feel like I was behind.
Yeah, let me go and ahead so, and get this over with.
And so, but we just had this flirty relationship, and I was like, okay, I'll kiss him. But I still didn't have like a boyfriend.
So when did you have your first boyfriend?
That was, I feel like he was after.
You had graduated? Right, no, you were a senior.
I was a senior when we met each other.
Oh.
And then we were kind of flirty and like, but we weren't official until right after I graduated, because remember I went to prom with somebody else.
I remember.
And so we weren't official. We just knew each other and, you know, that kind of thing. It wasn't until the summer, like right afterwards.
Okay. So as we are talking again, I'm making some assumptions here that you all have listened to our previous episode. So I apologize for that, because that's not good interviewing here. I did not give the history of our relationship. Mm-hmm. We have known each other for a very long time. I am much an elder to Nikki.
Now, that's very... Okay.
I am almost 10 years older than Nikki. And the reason why that's important is because our relationship started out differently than what it is now. I was more of a big sister to her. Now it is definitely just girlfriend, not just girlfriends, but girlfriends. And so when she's talking about these this particular relationship, I was there as that was forming. And I saw her as a little sister then. And so that's just kind of my perspective as I'm listening to this. Okay, so you get out of high school and you start, you're in this significant relationship.
Yes.
And you would say this is your first love.
Yes, absolutely.
And what did that do to your heart?
Ate me up, okay? Ate me up. Okay. I had no idea how to regulate.
Yes.
I had no idea just how to be in a healthy relationship. And so we were just trying to figure it out with each other.
Yes.
And in the meantime, we were just damaging each other just in a way. But I will say that was the first reinforcement of my belief system for sure.
Tell me what you mean by that.
So again, we're young, and so he would just break up with me literally, like it would be like the smallest thing and be like, okay, I think we should break up. Like, I started learning this eggshell dance that I could see very clearly in every significant relationship where I just can't fully, just take a deep breath and feel safe with someone.
Describe eggshell, like you felt like.
I was tiptoeing because I'm trying to figure out what am I doing.
So that
you won't do this again. Because again, he would break up with me, but he would come right back. And I so desperately wanted him to prove my story wrong, that I would take him back every time. Like, okay, come
now.
Back. Stay.
Now
yes.
He's ready.
Now yeah. he's ready. Now I'm worthy, you know? Mm-hmm. And so my value is hinged on his acceptance of me. Mm-hmm. And it was just this twisted cycle, because then he would do it again and again and again. And it went on for years.
You know, what's so interesting, Nikki, as you're talking, this is the first time I have come to this revelation that I'm about to say. Most of the people in my world and the people that I navigate with are self-aware and, and do their work, are very intentional on doing their work, that sometimes I think I forget that everybody isn't as open to how their dynamic speaks to a story they've told themselves. Mm-hmm. And so what do I mean by that? There are women who are listening to this or who may listen to this, and you've been in these on and off again relationships, or you've been in this together today or not today, or one of the terms that came to my mind is that ghetto love, you know, where we fighting all the time, make up to all of that. And you may believe that that is just what it is, but there is something deeper occurring, and you want, and this is not about blame towards anyone else. One of the things when you read Nikki's book that will be so eye-opening to you is how self-aware but personally responsible, excuse me, that she is, even when talking about this particular relationship. There's no blame toward him.
Yes.
Because he had his role in it, but so did you.
Right.
And so I just want you to consider, if you've had a lot of ups and downs back and forth, don't just brush it off as it is what it is. There's something to the pattern. And this is when you begin to do your work, this is not meaning that there is something wrong with you. It is just the reality of humanity. We all have a wound.
Yeah.
Right. And let me, I really want to lean into this for a moment. We all have a wound. And even I often find myself, Nikki, and okay, here I go. I'm not gonna cry, but I often find myself saying, even with me, it may not be in the area of relationship. I often find myself saying that this is the first time I'm gonna say this on this podcast. Lee and I just so happened to have found one another through the grace of God.
Mm-hmm.
And he has graced us in this area. But there's some stuff in me, or at least was in me during that time, that had a lot of wounding, even in relationships. Mm. And I came into my marriage with a lot of fear and uncertainty that Lee's consistency helped to heal.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that because it wasn't that I was so evolved or had it so together, or that's why it's, we have to be careful as married women when we present, like, girl, if you could just get yourself healed.
Yeah. You can be one of us.
You can be over here in our club. You do need to get healed, but that doesn't necessarily, because every married woman, every married woman ain't healed. Do you understand what I'm telling you? So I had to pause there, Nikki, because I even know, I can look back on my family, the women in our family. I'm not putting nobody business out there, ladies, so don't worry. But the women in our family, my sister and I talk about, we have our own relational crazy as well. So I just wanted to stop and say, don't assume that your patterns are just because.
Yeah.
There is something to that pattern. So let's continue. You said it started this eggshell dance that you saw repeat throughout your life.
Mm-hmm.
So you and, ooh, girl, I almost said his name. You and this gentleman, girl, we would have just edited it out.
Cut.
Lag on the plane. You and this gentleman finally decide, or maybe it was you. Didn't you decide?
Yes, I finally decided.
Enough is enough. Yes. Okay, and so.
I mean, it was because, listen.
What are you about to say?
When somebody else get introduced, because that's what, that's, and then that pride, yes.
And because that's across the board?
You know, because I was still willing to song and dance. Like, I still desperately wanted him to prove me wrong. But then that ego started. You're like, oh, no, you ain't.
So
I'm up here shucking and jiving.
Yes.
And you got somebody, like, so it was just like, you know.
Yeah. So this was a while ago. This was quite a while ago. Mm-hmm. And you've lived a lot of life since then. What has been the, or how would you describe the undercurrent for dating for you?
I have just never, I don't think I've ever felt safe in dating. And so I keep thinking the visual I always get is just that waiting to exhale thing. Mm-hmm. I've just never felt like, because yeah. I have my trigger, my wounds I've gravitated towards situations that has reinforced that untruth, that belief system.
Well, when you said I gravitate, that's interesting to me.
I haven't believed that I was enough. Mm-hmm. And so I have found myself in situations that reinforce that lack of value, that mm-hmm. lack of worth. Mm-hmm. And every relationship, I can look back on it from the most minute, just mm-hmm. crazy puppy love to a marriage, I've had that question mm-hmm. and have looked for that person to prove me wrong,
yeah,
in a sense.
Yeah, and you can see a commonality, Nikki. Mm-hmm. I don't want to make this statement if it's not true, but would you say there has been a commonality if we look at the significant relationships you've had mm-hmm. since that post-high school relationship to whatever relationship you've had through that? Have you seen a commonality in this behavior with the gentleman?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that commonality has been you feeling like you have to
prove
yourself to
yeah,
them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what have there been signs when you do a postmortem? Is that a word?
I think it's mortem.
Postmortem. This piece of hair is driving me crazy. Have you seen me messing with this whole? Have y'all seen me messing with this whole episode?
It has not. There's nothing wrong with it. I don't.
If you're watching, if you're listening to this, you don't understand. I keep messing with my hair. Okay, let's just say an autopsy. Mm-hmm. When you do an autopsy on the relationship, were there signs that you can look back on now mm-hmm. to say, I should have paid attention to that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So how do you, let me ask this question. I'm going to go to this definition. Okay. I believe that that's hard for women. And tell me your thoughts on this. Because do you find yourself trying to figure out, am I making this too big of a deal? Should I be paying attention to this? Yeah. Girl, give him a break on mm-hmm. this. Like, tell me about that.
Yes. Especially being self-aware. I think mm-hmm. the weight is heftier, mm-hmm. okay, because you are constantly aware of your stuff, mm-hmm. and so I know, like, that I'm guarded,
yes,
and I know I got PTSD borderline, you know,
yes.
So I'm like, Nikki, are you tripping?
Yes.
Like, I mean, he is human,
yes.
And you do have to give it a trial, like, you have to give it a little bit of time and space to really see if it's mm-hmm. like a human mistake or yes. character flaw.
Yes.
And, but it is difficult. It's difficult. Mm-hmm. It really is. And I think that I have to lean heavier on other people in that process mm-hmm. because I don't trust my own self a lot of times, yes. especially like in the beginning when it's so uncertain. Mm-hmm. And so I find myself being like, hey girl, is this
yeah, and when you say that, I think that is so real. And I think women, you know, in this society where we are like, trust your instinct, trust your gut, which you should, but there are some areas where you need to admit,
I
can't trust myself in
yes.
this area.
Yes.
And we talk about that all the time. Like, okay, I know I tend to, like, even this sounds crazy for me to use this as an example, but even with the re-release of this book, there has been this big debate about whether or not I was going to put my picture on the cover. Again, I'm using this to help you see yourself. And I was so adamant that I did not want my picture on the cover. But people who really know me know that I tend to play the back fiddle. Water down. There you mm-hmm. go. I tend to water down the Robin-ness mm-hmm. Too much. And so Nikki and my, oh Lord have mercy, that husband of mine, my husband.
Biggest cheerleader.
My girlfriend, Valerie, my girl, I can name my sister, my mom, I can name so many people who are like, girl. And so I had to say, Robin, you know you can't trust yourself in that area. that you have a history of sabotaging yourself and who you are. Mm-hmm. So trust the people around you mm-hmm. enough to push past your own insecurity. So when she's saying she can't trust herself, and that is not a slight against her, right. She's just saying, girl, I know if it's up to me, nobody will get past hello.
Listen, I'm talking about a whole gate, like any little thing, you yes. know, because you're just, and the thing is, it's just fear.
Yeah.
It's just fear and self-protection. And so I do a lot of, am I tripping, you mm-hmm. know, and second guessing. And I think until a person, to your point, just proves that mm-hmm. in time that, you know, they are trustworthy, that the situation is something you can lean on. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to yeah. get a second opinion.
And you've had experiences mm-hmm. where you've let your guard down.
Yes.
And was disappointed.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it's different when you have experiences and then you heal, in a sense, right? Mm-hmm. And you feel like, whew, I am showing up healed.
Yes.
So I got this. Like, I got this. And if you are hurt again in those situations, you feel like, like, flag on the play.
Right, that... Oh my gosh.
Get somebody else to do this. I don't want to.
We talked about this. Anika and I talked about this because we said how when it's been a familiar wound and that shows up again,
yes.
it is just so, so difficult.
Yes.
And I just wanted to talk about that because I think so many, that's, you won't look at it, but that's what happened to Risa Tisa.
Y'all tell you I was bullying.
She won't look at it, but that's what happened to her. The moment she began to say, mm-hmm. wait a minute, she said, girl, why are you like this? Yes. This is what she was saying to herself. That's why you need to look at it. She was saying to herself, girl, why are you like this? Why won't you just give some? No. This is what she said. You are that wounded that you can't receive love. That's what she told herself, Nick. And so she, and quite frankly, this is what I was talking to Kim about. Hey, girl, my sister. Nikki, this is what I was telling her about Risa. If I was her therapist, I could see a therapist saying to her, probably not me, but I could see because you know.
She would have been told that man up, okay? Like, what? Oh, he bought you a tire.
Tell him to come holler at me. But I could just see, I know that even in all seriousness, even me can say to someone, don't allow your pain
yes.
to cloud your ability to see somebody for who they are. And so it's just so easy. So, but I pulled out my book when you talked about what has been the challenge in relationships. And Nikki was flipping through this copy of Before You Take His Name. And I'm going to keep this in the book. It talks about the characteristics of a healthy, intimate mm-hmm. relationship. I wish I wrote this. I did not. Okay. But I'm just going to read the first few lines. It says this: the goal in an intimate relationship is to feel calm, centered, and focused. The intimacy needs to be safe, supportive, respectful, non-punitive, and peaceful. You feel taken care of, wanted, unconditionally accepted, and loved just for existing and being alive in a healthy, intimate mm-hmm. relationship. And you read That's that so good. And you said,
I have never in my entire life had a love like that.
Romantic love.
Love like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's heavy mm-hmm. and challenging. And the truth is, that's what we all long for.
Yeah.
And that doesn't, you know, I don't know that this in its entirety at all times is achievable within a human to human relationship. We all are flawed, mm-hmm. but more often than not,
yes.
you want this to be the reality, right? Now, another thing that I think happens, and we have so much to cover, and this is going to be one episode. We're not doing this in part two. So clearly, we are going to go over our normal hour, I think, but there's a couple of more things I want us to lean into. But one of the things that I think happens, though, and you and I have talked about narcissistic relationships mm-hmm. often. So when we talk about, when I just said, you want this to be the case more often than not, I had a little pause because in my heart, because I often talk about the importance of having more deposits than you have withdrawals in a relationship. And how I liken it is to a bank account. Mm-hmm. And if I deposit $10,000 into my bank account tomorrow, in Jesus' name, if I deposit $10,000 tomorrow, but then the next day I withdraw $5,000, now I have $5,000. Mm-hmm. Then the next day, if I've not made another significant deposit and I go and I'm allowed to withdraw $7,000, mm-hmm. now there's a $2,000 deficit. Mm-hmm. So when you take that back to romantic relationships, Nikki, sometimes women find themselves chasing that initial deposit.
Yes.
Because that initial deposit was so significant, yes. and it seemed so real and yes. seemed so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And there's a withdrawal and a withdrawal and a withdrawal. And they never pause to recognize, wait a minute, now I'm in the deficit.
Yes.
And that often happens in what could be deemed as a narcissistic dynamic.
Yes.
And there's a term called love bombing. What is your understanding of love bombing?
So I mean, it really is like a high. Mm-hmm. Like, you know how they say when someone's on drugs and they always chasing like that high. First high, because it's so euphoric. Mm-hmm. And you never really get back to mm-hmm. that. And they kill themselves like trying to
seek
mm-hmm. that again. And I definitely, like, I think mm-hmm. in the beginning, and you see that it's possible that this person can show up for you, can yes. have that feeling with yes. this person, that they can do these things, that they can say these things, that they can show up at this level. Mm-hmm. And so when all of those withdrawals start to happen, mm-hmm. and you already know that it is possible for this yes. to occur, you definitely chase it. Mm-hmm. And then when you get exhausted, you are asking yourself, it's easier for you to accept that blame.
There's
like
something
it's something that I'm doing mm-hmm. that is causing this not to occur again, because clearly they like to do that. Like,
they know how to do this.
So why wouldn't you, you know?
And you know, this term narcissistic is another one of those terms that is thrown around in mm-hmm. pop culture loosely. And the truth is, and I talk about this a little bit in another episode, I'll do a short mm-hmm. on YouTube. If you're listening to this on your favorite podcast app, go to YouTube and I'm gonna have a little short. That's about a less than a minute or maybe 2 minute video explaining this a little bit more. But narcissism, I want us to be careful. Let me tell you why I'm laughing. I want us to be careful about labeling mm-hmm. people with that title. And I laughed. And the reason why I wanted to discuss this with Nikki is because she herself has done, first of all, she's in the mental or in the behavioral mm-hmm. field. And so she definitely has some expertise in this area. And you've also done your own personal research on this. But mm-hmm. I started laughing because she knows.
It takes a lot.
I don't play mm-hmm. about giving somebody that label. I'm like, well, they may have narcissistic tendencies because it's thrown around so loosely
as a
catch-all, mm-hmm. right? And the truth is we all have egocentric behaviors mm-hmm. that could fall into the realm of narcissistic behavior. Mm-hmm. So we just want to be careful. However, narcissism is a real diagnosis yeah. and it's actually a personality disorder. So let me explain a little bit about that. Here's your psychology 101. There are mood disorders, think anxiety, depression, mm-hmm. even bipolar disorder is under the umbrella of mood disorders. But then you have personality mm-hmm. disorders, borderline personality disorder. There's even a social anxiety that mm-hmm. can fall at times under a personality mm-hmm. type. And then there's narcissistic personality disorder. Nikki, what's interesting, I have not been in school for a very long time. I got my master's a very long time ago. But when I was getting trained in diagnoses, back then, we didn't even directly diagnose someone with a personality disorder. We would put not otherwise specified mm. on that axis because the thought back then, now listen, I'm old school. It has changed now, mm-hmm. but the thought back then is that there wasn't a treatment for yeah. a personality disorder. It's just who that they person are. Was. Mm-hmm. And so there was nothing for a therapist to do. Now, again, that has evolved and changed. I gave you all of that. So when you're scrolling through social media and you hear somebody calling somebody narcissistic, you'll hear me in the background saying, hold on.
Hold on.
They may have tendencies toward that, but they may not be clinically able to be, there's criteria they have mm-hmm. to match or meet. Now with that, we just talked about love bombing, and love bombing is when someone that is narcissistic begins to just pour it, like she just explained, they just pour it all on. And so mm-hmm. you find yourself chasing that. Mm-hmm. And if you have been in a narcissistic relationship, it is extremely traumatic.
Yes.
Extremely. And so that's why I don't take it lightly. But when you find yourself, or if you found yourself in a situation like that, please seek support. When yes. you say, like, you need some help help identify what's
Absolutely.
Going on.
Absolutely, yes. And then how to move forward mm-hmm. in order to heal, in order to detach.
Boundaries.
Just boundaries. I mean, you need support. You need support from people who know what they're doing and know what they're talking about as it relates to that.
And they understand.
Yes.
Again, now let me just say this. Let me give y'all my little therapeutic perspective. I believe, and anybody who's ever heard me talk has heard me say, all of us are on the spectrum of something.
Yes.
So when I pull out my DSM, which is how a therapist diagnoses someone, there are certain criteria the person has to match over time. But what I have found is that even if you don't match all the criteria of a certain something, you may be on the spectrum yes. of that something. And so if someone is even on the spectrum yeah. of narcissistic behavior, it can be extremely exhausting and overwhelming and detrimental to your self-worth and your self-esteem. And so if you have experienced anything that sounds similar to what mm-hmm. we just described, please, please seek support from somebody who is aware and trained
yes.
and has the expertise to help you navigate it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you are dealing with a narcissistic personality, it can get dangerous.
Yes.
And so even if it's not physically, so seek support. That
yes.
was our little
Agreed.
PSA.
That was good.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
We can go off of that.
Yes.
Okay. Now, as we begin to wrap up, I have some questions about how you navigate single life as a mom. But before I do, I'm going to just bust out with this question.
Ooh.
It's on this list.
Mm-hmm.
But two questions. How often, Nikki, do you find yourself out on dates?
Ah!
First of all, are you on dating sites?
Yes, I am. Now, there's an ebb and a flow
yes.
about my engagement. And I try to honor myself. Like mm-hmm. when I feel it's clear to me when I need a break. Like if I'm scrolling, it's five profiles and I'm just like, no,
yes.
or you doing too much. You're
gosh.
Not in a place where you can approach this with a clear heart. So take a break, baby. Come back and like in a couple weeks,
yes.
you know, you're doing too much.
You have to get mad at me. Okay. So there's girl code. There's girl code when you are single and you have a married girlfriend or you have a girlfriend that's in a serious relationship. And the girl code is what we talk about is not supposed to be talked about with your man.
Mm.
Okay. I have a confession.
You been pillow talking?
About this one particular situation. It wasn't uh-huh. pillow talking, but you sent a picture the other day.
Y'all, they be eating me up on these dating sites, but I am hanging in there. But if you got this picture,
I'm not gonna show it to the people, but I'm about to show you what picture you're talking about. She sent this picture of this dude. So I send these crazy memes about dating all the time, and she sent this picture of this guy who had ended up in her app, and she said, Robin, I don't have the capacity for your memes.
Because
right
this is what this is what I gotta navigate as a single woman out here in these streets. This is what's in my inbox right now. So
I'm just gonna tell you Santa Claus was in her.
Don't know. Like he is literally
Santa.
Santa.
I showed Lee
and what he said.
He said you need to get off. He said,
I mean
that
it's
was
like
sad.
It's,
get off.
It is crazy. And so I have to, because literally when you are hopeful,
yes,
and you
seriousness.
Open up your app, depending on where you at, what else is going on in your life,
mm-hmm.
what else you got going on, how you self-regulating, you open that up, you're like,
that's just like that.
why me, God? Like,
that
do
was
you,
that was scary.
It is out of control sometimes. So again, I have, so it's like sometimes I'll be like, oh, I'm ready for this. You know, I'm engaging. Yes. Hey, how you doing? You're okay if y'all, if somebody ghosts you. And other times I'm like,
I can't. So,
all right, y'all, listen, I had to jump in right here because Nikki and I had completely wrapped the podcast. I was getting ready to send it to the editor and then something happened. I can't remember if we were talking about something, but I realized I did not ask you, Nikki, the most important question I needed to ask you as you are specifically navigating dating as a single mom. So the question I wanted to ask you was, how do you determine how soon you are willing to introduce your children to the person you are dating, or do you introduce your children? What is your answer to that?
I do not. I'm just playing. You know,
it's a no. It's a no, Nikki.
Yeah, listen, and you know, that is very difficult for me. And I will say, the thing that always rings in my mind is like, number one, you really got to know your kids. And I think the answer is different for every person, depending on the age, depending on their sensitivity level, their attachment levels, how they're feeling about you moving forward. It's just a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think that for me, it is still TBD. It's still to be determined. But mm-hmm. I will say that it's not something that I'm willing to consider unless it was a situation that I really, really felt that was going to be long-term.
Okay, so I love that because, you know, what often happens is that people are looking for a fast and hard rule. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it shouldn't be before this time or it needs to be by this time. But I love what you said, that there are so many nuances to it, so many factors that come to play. So for you, it's a TBD. However, yes. I'm going to push you a little bit because I know okay. your personality doesn't necessarily like you. You rebel against fast rules about anything. But
that is so true.
Okay. First of all, did you hear me say you rebel? I'm going to need to say you rebel.
I
says
I
you rebel.
But since you insist, I did.
you rebel. Okay. Do you believe, though, we can put any type of parameters around it? Now, from a clinical perspective, I do have some thoughts about it, but mm-hmm. I'm always very sensitive to people who are actually real-time navigating it. If you were talking to somebody and they were coming to you for wisdom or direction on this specifically, would there be any parameters you would put?
So I would say you at least need to be in a committed mm-hmm. dating situation for me. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I'm pausing on relationship because for some people, they feel like I don't want to commit to a relationship until I know the dynamic you'll have with my children, which is fair. But yes, I do think before you commit to a relationship, there is that time period where you're just dating exclusively. And I mm-hmm. think it at least needs to be an exclusive dating situation. At the bare minimum, you both have decided, okay, we're going to focus on us and we're about to see what us going to be.
Okay. And I think that's very fair. Yeah. I think that's very fair. Now, if I were to give... And, you know, while I'm trying to push you for a fast, hard, or not even a hard rule, I'm trying to push you to give some parameters. Mm-hmm. I totally agree that it really does depend on how old the children are.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on the relationship with their father, if they have yes. a solid relationship with their father. I think it depends on how recently
the were breakup was.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. All of that good stuff. So I think I would lean to what you said. Now, you just made me really think about something which confirms how long I've been out of this, but you're right. The person may not be calling each other boyfriend, girlfriend. Do people still say that? They may not call each other that. But whatever that in-between time is, that, you know, you don't want to necessarily bring every guy that you're going on a coffee date with
right
in front of your children.
Mm-mm. Right. Agreed.
Fair enough.
I think that experimental time, just do you and him, you and him. But when you decide, okay, I think this could be something, let's commit to really focusing on seeing what that's going to be. And I think then you can involve other people.
You see how you said other people? Because see, we were talking about children.
I feel the same way about family too. But I'm real, you know. I'm real like.
Now that's a whole nother conversation. That's another conversation. Oh, Nikki, thank you for jumping on with me to answer that question. I want y'all, don't hit me up in the DMs. Hit Nikki up in the DMs to share your thoughts about that question. Nikki, thank you. Okay, y'all, for real. Let's get back to the rest of the podcast.
Okay, so you're on dating sites. How often would you say you go out on dates?
I think it's like, I think it just ebbs and like, I think when I'm feeling it, yes. And I feel like I'm getting into that season again where I'm like,
I'm not ready.
Oh well, I don't know what to tell you.
And you've always said that it is okay. I have another question. Would you prefer for you meet somebody on the app or mm-hmm. however you meet them mm-hmm. and they want to take you to a 5-course meal? Mm-hmm. Would you say yes for the first date?
So my preference is a no, but yes. I have really tried to.
You be bold in that.
I have tried to be more open, depending on now. It just got to be a little. The dynamic got to hit, mm-hmm. but I have tried not to be so, but I prefer a coffee date. Like I just feel like, let's just break the ice real.
But I love that.
Real okay, so, slow, like real, you know, no pressure.
Yes.
Go meet me at Starbucks, a quick 30 minutes. Let's just read it, fill it out and see if we want more.
But I
of each
think
other.
That is so fair because one of the things, again, for those of you who are single and you have children, you've said to me that what it requires to go on a date yes. date is a lot of jumping through hoops with your children, yes. which makes that more difficult for
yes.
you.
Yes. I mean, because a coffee date is something I could fit in between something.
Yes.
I can get off work yes. and meet you at Starbucks for 30 minutes before I go get my kids.
Absolutely.
If you want to meet me at a 5-star restaurant, that's a totally different lift. And it's difficult to balance doing that lift on Tuesday with Johnny
yes.
and then that lift again on Thursday with Tim and then that lift again on Monday. Listen, after two yes. weeks,
that's
it's like
much.
It's too much.
And that is why we were scrolling on social media recently, and this is a little while ago, and this woman was going off on men who want to take a woman on a coffee date. And the reason why that was significant to you mm-hmm. and I is because people make things principles yes. that really are preferences.
It's just preference.
Because that's her preference.
Yes.
You would want him to take
yes.
you on a coffee date.
Yes.
Okay. We have to stop here. We've talked about so much, but the last question I'm going to ask you is, how does faith play a part in your dating?
Ooh. I just knowing that God would just never withhold a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that plays in my head mm-hmm. so much, you know, just with your physical eyes and when things just don't make sense
mm-hmm.
and when things don't feel good
mm-hmm.
and just knowing that God, your father
yes.
would not withhold a good thing from you. And mm-hmm. if that thing isn't in your hands right now, it's a reason why. And if it was and it left, then that isn't your good thing, you know?
Yes.
And so I just have to remind myself with dating and just so many different areas of my life that what is good for me
yes.
is what he will allow.
And you know, even practically, we have had to have some conversations because we love Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, I have found you being a little hard on these gentlemen. Yeah, Nikki. Now, normally I'm the hard one, but we talk
about their relationship with Jesus
versus church.
Yes, yes.
Because first of all, these men on these dating sites, why do I know? Because I'm in these streets with my girls.
She's in these streets with me.
These dudes say I'm spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
Like that terminology is a little tricky if you really love the God of the Bible. But we've had conversations when they don't necessarily go to church every Sunday. I'm a whole first lady. But I know that a lot of people, particularly black men, and that's who you're now, you're open. she's open at this point, but particularly men. So I'll just say men are a little bit disillusioned with mm-hmm. the church, or have had some frustrations. So I don't want you to cross him completely yes. out.
Yes.
If he doesn't go to church right now, I want him to have a heart towards mm-hmm. church. So that's number one. Okay. And then it was one more. If somebody, because we really have to wrap, but if somebody happens to be scrolling through,
mm-hmm.
what are a couple of things that are important to you if you're dating? If you're taking somebody seriously, what do you want him to possess quality-wise?
I would say, number one, just a relationship with God. Mm-hmm. You know, I just don't believe that a man can lead me if he's not led by Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And then number two, it's good with kids.
Mm-hmm.
I am a mom's mom,
mm-hmm.
and that will never change. Mm-hmm. And so someone who wouldn't mind just being an active father, not like a father on paper, but mm-hmm. like somebody who wouldn't mind coming in and being just as yes. active as I am. And then just someone who said, whatever you do or say, just say it with your chest. Like, mm-hmm. I don't do well with like that tiptoeing. If you're going to ask me out, if you would like to ask me out, you just ask me yes. out. If you're interested in me, say it and then do something. You know, just a man who takes initiative.
Okay, let me ask you this, because y'all are, does it matter how much money he makes?
For me, you should tell, you know, we, okay. I, cause you're gonna try to take it there, like McDonald's style. Like, to me, that's different then. So does it matter to an extent? Yes. To an extent where you able to take care of yourself as a man and contribute to a family. But does he need to be like balling? No.
No, I just said that I think what a man does shapes his
you are very hard about this. Like, he needs to be like have a
passion. Yes. I believe that what a man does really does impact his self-worth. And if a man doesn't feel what's the word I'm looking for? If he doesn't feel that he is having a significant impact in some way, it shows up subtly in other ways. Now, where I've always been hard, like, we're like, if he works at Quick Trip, she's like, would you be okay if he was working at Quick Trip? And I said, if he's going to be a franchise owner.
Yeah.
Eventually.
He has to be going towards, or if it's like, if he's working at a branch of something, it's like, do you plan on opening up your own?
Have your own. Well, I've adjusted.
Okay, what's the adjustment?
But he needs to have some passion. There has to be
yes,
something
I agree.
That he is passionate mm-hmm, about.
That he feels like he's on this earth for.
Yes, a purpose, a mm-hmm. purpose-driven life that he is not being a rapper. Not a rapper, but a purpose-driven life where he feels like, this is what I'm, the impact I'm called
yes.
to make. Because you're purpose driven.
Yes, I agree.
And there's going to be a conflict if he doesn't have his own thing, mm-hmm. his own passion.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't have to own a chain of CVS. But he does need to say.
Yeah, we had a whole argument about that.
He does need to have something significant mm-hmm. that he's
no, doing. I agree.
See, I evolve and change.
I love that. I love that for me. Because I'm like, the pool you narrowing me in is this big.
Now, it didn't even have to be a pastor. I am just kidding because, honey. All right, Nikki, thank you for being with me on this. I hope that this has blessed you.
It has blessed me.
We always have a good time in these conversations. Make sure you head over to your Instagram, which is
Unplanned Perfection.
And check out, you can click the bio there to mm-hmm. get her book. And I will make sure I do a tag of the book as well. Make sure you DM us and let us know your takeaway. All of our information is right here in the description. Until next time, I hope that this series, Dating Dilemma, has blessed you. We're starting a brand new series probably next week.
Ooh.
And so make sure you tell all your family and friends about this series. And I'll see you next time. Bye.
Well, girl, that's it for this episode. I already know you have at least one aha, one takeaway that's going to help you continue to live intentionally, fully engaged. But before you go, girl, I have another opportunity for you to take your investment into you to the next level. Listen, you and I both know that there are some patterns that you have been dealing with for a long time. You and I both know that there's just something that you can't seem to identify that's keeping you from getting to the next level. Or maybe for you, girl, maybe this one is for you. Maybe things are good, but you just know they could be better, but you just don't quite know what the missing piece is. Well, after some prayerful consideration, I decided to offer to all of you what I'm calling bite-sized breakthroughs for busy women. Listen, girl, one of the things I hear all the time is, Robin, I just don't have the time. I truly want to get a PhD in me, but when in the world do I have the time? Well, I have you in mind with bite-sized breakthroughs for busy women. Listen, girl, this is your no excuse path to identifying what you need to understand so that you can see, experience, and curate the life you love. Bite-sized breakthroughs is your opportunity to discover what's necessary to push past what's stopping you, one aha at a time. This is a low investment, no risk opportunity for you. So stop what you're doing right now. Head on over to robinmayonline.com/breakthrough. robinmayonline.com/breakthrough. This one is for you.